Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for joining us and listening. You most likely know by now where to vote, but just in case you still need to find out where to vote, an easy information source online is vote.org. That's vote.org. If you're not registered to vote, you can register at the polling place when you go to vote. Check to find out what you will need to be able to vote, and there are many sources online. For instance, you can go to iwillvote.com to find out what you need to bring when you vote. Even if you are pre-registered, you will be required to provide an approved form of ID. Approved forms of ID include an Iowa driver's license or non-operator ID, U.S. passport, tribal ID, card, or document, U.S. military or veteran ID, or an Iowa voter ID card. If your address has changed or if you register at the polls on election day, you'll also be required to provide proof of residence. If your account address is on your – if your current address is on your current and valid ID, then it may also serve as proof of residence. Other proof of residence documents must include your name and address and be current within 45 days of presentation. These documents, except an ID, may be in electronic format, such as on a cell phone or a tablet. Additional approved proof of residence documents are a residential lease, utility bill, including a cell phone bill, bank statement, paycheck, government check, or other government documents, or a property tax statement that is current within 45 days of final payment date. If you're unable to provide an approved form of identification or unable to prove residence, you can have your identity and residence attested to by another registered voter in the precinct, or you can cast a provisional ballot that can provide ID up until 12 p.m. noon on Monday after Election Day. Today on Local Talk, stories of enterprise and survival. The owners of Torrent Microbrewery, located in downtown Ames, will be here to talk about their long, strange trip owning a bar and brewery in the time of COVID. Later in the hour, we'll learn the genesis of a new business opening up soon on Main Street. But first, the weather and news. It's going to be a warm and balmy week, shades of Indian summer. Today, it will be in the 50s, and Election Day will see temperatures in the upper 60s, good weather for standing in line. And we should see sunny, clear days with continued temperatures in the high 60s for the rest of the week. Tonight, it will be near freezing, but after that, temperatures at night will go up into the 40s. Now, here's Dennis Hart with a summary of news from around the state of Iowa.
The coronavirus and its continued spread through Iowa, the final Iowa poll before tomorrow's election, and last-minute political campaigning in the state all made big news last week. Let's start with the election and the Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll released this past Saturday night. It showed President Trump leading Joe Biden 48-41% in Iowa. That poll showed that men are more likely to support Trump and women were more likely to support Biden. Independents favor Trump. The president made a last-minute campaign stop in Iowa yesterday afternoon. Among other things, he told a crowd at the Dubuque Regional Airport that the coronavirus would soon be a thing of the past and that he was the candidate for farmers, factory workers, and patriots. He also talked about the Supreme Court justices he had appointed and leveled numerous charges against his Democratic Party opponent. This past Thursday, Vice President Mike Pence held a rally at the Des Moines Airport, telling those in attendance to vote for Republicans up and down the ballot. This past Friday, Biden had showed up in Iowa, taking part in a car rally at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. He said President Trump has waved the white flag when it comes to fighting the coronavirus and said he would increase testing and provide businesses and schools the resources needed to reopen safely. Now, back to the Iowa poll. The same one that came out Saturday night also showed Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst leading Democratic challenger Teresa Greenfield 46-42%. And it showed Republicans having the edge in three of the state's four congressional districts. The only district where Democrats appeared to have the edge was the third, which includes Des Moines and stretches across southwest Iowa. Also last week, word that a Des Moines woman whose 2018 election ballot had been rejected after elections officials had wrongly included her on a list of felons who were barred from voting, had filed a lawsuit alleging that Iowa and Polk County had violated her constitutional rights. 31-year-old Jessica Bensley is one of thousands of people in recent years whose names were wrongfully listed in a database that election officials used to enforce Iowa's longtime felon voter ban. Now, the coronavirus. The death toll in Iowa from the virus continued to go up last week, exceeding 1,700 by yesterday. The number of people infected by the virus also continued to climb, surpassing 130,000 by yesterday. The state's positivity rate was 14.1% over the past 2 weeks, but 43 Iowa counties reported positivity rates over 15% over those 2 weeks. And the state also reported new record-high numbers of hospitalizations due to the coronavirus each day last week. By yesterday, that number of hospitalizations had reached 676. The Des Moines Register put it this way. During October, the virus infected another Iowan every 80 seconds on average. Every 20 minutes, another Iowan was admitted to a hospital with symptoms of the virus. And every 2.5 hours, another Iowan died from it. By several metrics, October was Iowa's worst month for the pandemic. And last week, the White House Coronavirus Task Force said the state had the 10th highest per capita rate of coronavirus infections in the nation. Meanwhile, last week, Governor Kim Reynolds announced that a team of scientists from Iowa State University and the University of Iowa would receive a $2 million Federal CARES Act grant to support their ongoing coronavirus vaccine research. That research will follow up the work being done now by companies trying to come up with a so-called first-generation vaccine. And last week, a legal advisor for Governor Reynolds pushed back against a federal inspector general's contention that Iowa had misspent $21 million in funds allocated by Congress for coronavirus relief. Sam Langholz sent a letter to the U.S. Treasury Department and said Iowa should have the flexibility to spend that money on an accounting system the state contracted for last year, before the pandemic. Earlier, the state of Iowa's auditor, Rob Sand, had also said that Iowa has misallocated the money. There was also word that local school districts around Iowa were offering incentives to encourage substitute teachers to keep teaching during the coronavirus pandemic. One of those districts, the Des Moines Public School District, raised its daily pay for substitutes and added a $500 sign-on bonus. In other news last week, Governor Reynolds said she would back a new law that would ban and track racial profiling. Right now, the state does not ban racial profiling or mandate that law enforcement collect racial data on traffic stops. Also last week, Amazon announced it will hire 1,000 full-time workers in Iowa. They will work at the 645,000-square-foot Amazon Fulfillment Center, scheduled to be opened later this year in Bondurant. That facility will be the third Amazon property to open in Iowa this year. Amazon delivery stations in Grimes and Iowa City were opened earlier. The hiring at the Bondurant facility will give the company three times as many employees as the city's next biggest employer, the school district. Starting salary at the Bondurant facility will be $15 an hour, more than double Iowa's minimum wage of $7.25. There was also word last week that a former Cedar Rapids police chief had been killed in a plane crash in Florida. Greg Graham died when the small plane he was piloting crashed into a field in Marion County, Florida. He had only recently earned his pilot's license. Graham was police chief in Cedar Rapids from 2008 to 2012. At the University of Northern Iowa last week, word that university president Mark Nook had decided that a local chapter of an advocacy group that opposes abortion would be allowed to form a student group on campus. Nook's ruling conflicts with an earlier decision by UNI's student government, which had denied the group Students for Life's application to form a group on campus, saying it would create a hostile environment and not meet the campus's good faith policy. In Indianola last week, the city council appointed Pamela Pepper as the new mayor. She was one of several applicants for the position left open by the resignation of former Mayor Kelly Shaw in September. Pepper is a former Indianola City Council member and is an assistant vice president at Drake University. In Urbandale last week, word that the school district superintendent will retire at the end of the academic year. Steve Bass has been district superintendent since 2005. The school board has started searching for his replacement. At the Des Moines Airport, a man was cited on a weapons charge last week after Transportation Security Administration officers found a loaded handgun in his carry-on bag. Four bullets, including one in the chamber, were loaded inside the gun. The man told authorities he had forgotten he had the weapon with him. Meanwhile, outside the Polk County Courthouse in Des Moines, a new fence was installed as part of a security upgrade. It's designed to channel gatherings onto public sidewalks and away from the sides of the building. Meanwhile, in Grimes last week, word that a local developer plans to build what's being called the biggest privately owned multi-sport facility in the Midwest. It would have 13 turf fields that could be used for youth soccer, football, baseball, or softball. The proposed Grimesplex would be on 50 acres of a bigger residential, hotel, and retail development. It's expected to open next year. The project is being put together by Hope Development and Realty. In Boone last week, a story about a dog made statewide news. A pregnant, older black Labrador retriever was dropped off at the Humane Society and lost every one of the 21 puppies she had been carrying. The mother dog was said to be in stable condition, and community members raised about $20,000 for her care. It was estimated the dog had been in labor for 24 hours before she was dropped off at the shelter. She was taken immediately to the Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine for care. She quickly went into labor and gave birth to two puppies. One was stillborn, the other died minutes after birth. All of the other puppies were either stillborn or too underdeveloped to survive. Late last week, there was word that the dog's condition had improved, that she had been released from care to a new foster owner, and that the dog had been named Ruthie. In the world of college football, both Iowa State University and the University of Iowa were in action this past weekend. ISU defeated Kansas 52-22. The University of Iowa lost to Northwestern 21-20. And at the Hawkeyes Stadium in Iowa City, a tradition continued. Usually at the end of the first quarter, fans in the stadium, along with players and coaches, turn to the nearby Children's Hospital and wave at the young patients and anyone else who is at the hospital windows to see it happen. Because of the coronavirus, the general public was not allowed inside the stadium for the game. But the players and coaches from both the U of I and Northwestern kept their tradition alive at the end of the quarter, turning and waving. And one more note before I go. This one's about the legendary Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake. That's the place where, more than 60 years ago, rock and roll pioneers Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson performed their final show just before they died in a nearby plane crash. Now comes word that the Surf is being considered for National Historic Landmark status. That's the same list that includes the Amana Colonies, President Hoover's birthplace in West Branch, and Terrace Hill, the 1869 Iowa Governor's Mansion in Des Moines. The Surf is already listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Getting historic landmark status would increase its eligibility for preservation grants and open it to technical assistance from the National Park Service. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, wishing I could hang around, but our time for parting has arrived. Now, don't forget, the election is tomorrow, so if you haven't voted yet, go do it. And don't forget to come right back here on Friday, when I'll have word on what makes news in Ames this week. Until then, fond wishes, and have a great week.
Vert Rouge, music by the French-Canadian composer Benoît Jutras, one of my favorite composers. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Thank you for listening in. As COVID reshapes society, entrepreneurs continue to roll with the punches and reinvent business in totally new landscapes. And Andy McCormick is one of the owners of Torrent Brewery, and he's agreed to come to Local Talk and to describe how that looks for a local microbrewery. Welcome to Local Talk, Andy. You've been with Ames. You have been in Ames for prior to the pandemic, not a whole lot prior, but you've been with us for a few years here in Ames. And now you have gone through this very strange phase along with everybody else. What word would you describe your experience as a microbrewery during a pandemic?
A blitz.
A blitz.
It's been a blitz. It's been sort of just grab a hold and hold on and figure out, you know, some days it's day to day adjusting.
Uh-huh. Yeah, somebody once said to me, if you're going to ride a tiger, you have to ride it loosely. It sounds like that's kind of what you've been doing.
Yep. That's a good way to describe it.
So what does that mean for a microbrewery? Can you kind of tell us specifically what that actually adds up to? What changes
Sure.
have you had to make?
Yeah. For a small microbrewery like us, we're just heading into our sixth year here in February. It's major changes, major. You know, for instance, canning used to be a minor part of our business. And, you know, we offered that for about 2 years prior to this pandemic, prior to March. And it was always a good, you know, option and revenue stream for us. But as soon as March happened, it became our lifeblood. We tenfold had to start ordering more cans. We went from ordering, you know, several hundred cans at a time to several thousand cans at a time. So when we were closed down, we were still allowed to sell product to go, only to go. So what we did is we closed down the tap room and we opened up our west door, and basically you'd place an order online or an order in person, come inside, just inside the door for a minute, we'd hand off your beer and you'd be on your way. It's a pretty tough go to just operate in that manner.
And what makes it tough?
Just the margins. You know, we're set up for people to come in and sit down and relax and, you know, stay for an hour or two, have two or three beers. You know, right now you could have one of our soft pretzels and just sort of take a load off. And where, you know, it's just cans to go, it can be... Maybe I don't want to say it's sort of out of sight, out of mind for some people. You know, if they can't go in and have that full, inclusive experience in the tap room.
Yeah. So you're saying that not being able to come in and kind of have Torrent be a place to go, it affected the amount of business you
had?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, tremendously, mm-hmm. tremendously. You know, when the tap room is closed, our business probably drops anywhere from 65 to 75%.
Did you ever consider having to close during the pandemic?
We did. Yeah. You know, we initially did the to-go option for like 4 days a week. And, you know, we had to sort of evaluate it week by week, you know, if it was worth being open, you know, because it's not just a business. We're reshuffling a family. I have my wife, Angie, and I, run the company. I say she's the boss. She tells me what to do. I do the production. You know, we have three young kids that, you know, also, you know, a closure affects them. They suddenly have to come to work with mom and dad sometimes, or if they stay home, you know, they might be making their own meals or making some mm-hmm. own decisions, you know, or having mom and dad not around, mm-hmm. You know, the way that they're normally used to.
Because the closure has caused you to have to be at work more. Is that what you're saying?
So unfortunately, we had to lay off staff. We had to lay off virtually our entire staff. That puts, you know, myself and my wife doing more hours, you know, doing the canning and, you know, because everything was done by hand, you know, one can at a time. And so we would, you know, do the canning, do the seaming, do the labeling, the writing, and then also, you know, the organization and the packaging and handing off at the door to the to the customers. Even though you were closed, we still had to find a new way to operate, and just that took more time, more thought, you know.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, even if we're not letting people in, we still wanted to make it as safe as possible for patrons coming in to pick up their product and also for ourselves.
Right. So you kind of went from being a bar to a manufacturer.
Yeah. Well, so the brewery we're sort of two businesses in one. On one half, we do have the manufacturing production facility. On the front half, it's considered a retail facility, you know, retail location for the brewery, for the pub. So yeah, there's a lot of adjustments that we had to make, you know, on the fly, you know, depending on what was required of us.
So now the bar part, the retail part of it is open again. How has it changed?
You know, we were closed twice.
Right.
You know, once back in March for a couple months, and then again later in the summer. It's changed by the fact that, well, number one, from our perspective, you know, we've gone through the rules and regulations and social distancing. You know, we developed with our staff an extensive, like, hourly cleaning list. And just some different protocols and procedures. So that's changed on our end so that we can make it safe for staff and cut. And then from the patron perspective, you know, it's taken people some time to feel comfortable to come back. And, you know, there's still people that we saw, you know, on a weekly basis that we still haven't seen, you know, come back, you know, to this point. And so, you know, business from pre-COVID is definitely, you know, considerably down.
And do you find that you can run a bar so that it feels that it's safe for everybody, the customers and the staff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The great thing with our facility is our facility is over 5,000 square feet, and our tap room area is over 2,000 square feet. And we still have an occupancy of 157, but with a 50% mandate, that takes it down to 78, and we've actually set it up for 74. So when you first walk in, it is very clear and evident that there is space between the tables and stools and everything. Mm-hmm. It's about as wide open as you're going to find in Ames.
Torrent Brewery is on Burnett, correct?
Yep, 504 Burnett. Just catty corner from the downtown fairway, east from City Hall or west from the post office.
And as you say, in a very large building, which I think used to be a car dealership, if I remember correctly. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, it used to be a Matisse's Ford.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So now you are open again and life goes on. What is the Midwest Legend beer release? What's happening there?
Oh, sure. So Midwest Legend is, we're working in conjunction with Carson King and his foundation. Great opportunity, fantastic guy, great foundation, great purpose. So we've already brewed the beer. It's going to be a lighter bodied beer, golden beer, with a little bit of our own twist on it. They give each brewery that is involved with the project a little bit of liberties adjust it. But the great thing is a dollar from every pint sold of that beer is going to go to the Carson King Foundation and then toward Central Iowa and Iowa, across Iowa derecho relief efforts to food pantries. We'll be releasing that beer at a special event on November 20th. And actually Carson will be in the tap room himself serving pints and selling cans of his beer.
For those of us who are ignorant like me, tell us about Carson.
Oh, yeah. So Carson first appeared on the scene during the Iowa-Iowa State game last year during a televised event from College Game Day on ESPN, where he was holding up a handwritten sign with Sharpie, basically asking for people to Venmo him money for a few cases of beer. Long story short, he got more than enough money for a few cases of beer, and it caught national attention and just took off.
And then he decided to use some of that money to help folks, right? I mean, he kind
yeah,
of
yeah, he did. He ended up donating. I do believe he kept enough money for a case or two of beer, and then I believe he donated nearly $3.5 million to the University of Iowa Steadfast Children's Fund.
Yeah. So now let me be clear about this, that the beer itself, that's not his beer. That's your beer, right? You're making the beer?
Well, we made the beer. It is Carson's recipe that he developed. And
so did he develop this after? Did he develop this after his beer stunt, or was he always a beer maker?
Well after his fundraising efforts.
So he decided to go into making beer.
Not necessarily. Carson actually works for a construction company that his brother owns that coincidentally, I believe a portion of the funds that the construction company brings in goes through his foundation as well. And I believe that's all linked into his website, CarsonKingFoundation.org. But Carson originally, there's a brewery in Moline, Illinois. I think it's called Midwest Beer Works, that helped develop this recipe with Carson.
Okay.
And they've released the recipe to breweries that were interested in participating in the fundraising efforts. And in that release, they allow each brewery to give it their own twist. So it's basically the same light ale recipe that's very approachable, but some places give it a little autumn theme twist to it, a little fruity theme twist to it, and on ours we just gave it a little bit of a hoppy fruity twist on the back end. So
we're really looking forward to
seeing how it turns out.
Is it good?
I haven't even tried it yet. I haven't tried it other than Brew Day. It's actually in our fermentation tanks right now.
Okay, so when is the beer released?
The beer will be released in an event at the tap room on Friday, November 20th, and Carson will be actually behind the bar serving his beer from 5:30 to 7:30 that Friday.
Okay,
he's really looking forward to getting the can ready.
Yeah, so you are still once in a while having an event at the bar. I mean, your bar used to be a venue for a lot of political rallies and all sorts of events. So once in a while, you're still having something.
We do. We control the size of them. For like this event, we'll have probably, we anticipate a line, and we'll just ask everyone just to socially distance in the line, and we'll get everybody in and out very, very quickly. So it'll be a quick transaction. They're getting an opportunity to meet Carson. He can sign autographs on cans and, his labels and everything. So, it should be pretty fun.
So we're speaking with Andy McCormick, co-owner of Torrent Brewery. Andy, are you going to stick around? Is Torrent here to stay, or what are you seeing?
Oh yeah, we're tough. We're not going anyplace. We love being where we're at. We love Ames. We love what we do. The pandemic, basically, like everyone else, like every other business, household, across the country, just makes you rethink what you're doing and make a shift and adjust. And businesses that can adjust well will go on. And I think we've adjusted fairly well, and we have a vision going forward of what we want to accomplish.
So if I were to ask you what, as a business person, what you would define as a secret to success at a time like this, you would say flexibility, ability to adjust. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Number one, tremendous flexibility and being very fluid, being able to gather information and make a decision quickly and change from one day to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much being able to adapt.
Do you think that you'll take anything out of all of this with you that will make you a better microbrewery owner? Do you think you've grown?
Very much so. For instance, I mentioned that we've been canning a lot more. Just that part of our business, how it operates, we have learned a tremendous amount going forward and how to run that aspect of our business, you know, better and you know, financially more responsible and you know, into the future where, you know, we have to sort of forecast a little bit further out than what we're used to, but
mm-hmm.
it definitely is learning experience, but we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot over this last year.
Do you think you'll continue the canning business on a different level? Let's assume the pandemic is going to end someday. Do you think that if and when that it happens, that you will, you'll have a different approach to the canning aspect of the business?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a much more important major part of our business, mm-hmm. From here on out going forward. It's always going to be an option. You know, even if someone just wants to come and grab a quick single can or four pack or six pack, they can do that. Or if they come into the tap room, have a beer or two, they can grab a can or a four pack to go. It's always going to be an important part.
Interesting. Us. Now, you still grow hops out in the Boone Valley?
I don't. Actually, when I started the brewery, I had to quit that. It was just, uh-huh. There's just not enough time. but I actually we stopped that farm, and I do have the last two plants from that farm growing in my backyard. So I still grow them in my backyard.
That's very sweet. The lineage is being carried by those two plants in your backyard. Well, thank you, Andy, for joining us. Any last words?
Oh, no, I really appreciate you guys having me on today. It's nice to talk with you. And
well, we spoke with you before.
Tell our story.
Yeah, we spoke with you before you were before you had a brewery in Ames, when you were still just growing hops out in the Boone Valley. So it's nice to hear that you are, you know, that you're still with us. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, take care. And this is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, your local radio for difficult times. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Speaking of difficulties, there is a lot of frustration going around, but as COVID does reshape society, entrepreneurs continue to envision the continuation of culture and good times as well. Amanda Lepper is owner of Dog-Eared Books, a new bookstore soon to open on Main Street. Welcome to Local Talk, Amanda.
Thanks, Ursula.
It's good to see you and good to have you here on Local Talk. So describe exactly what is going to be happening. This is a new business going up in town.
Yeah, my business partner and I, Ellen Grimm, also an Ames native, we're tired of living in a town without an independent bookstore. When I travel, I'll spend hours of my vacation in someone else's bookstore in far-flung towns. And I really wanted to have that experience here in Ames again. So Ellen and I are opening an independent bookstore on Main Street, 203 Main. We have signs up in our windows and have our website launched, and we're getting our building ready. so that we can have people in our cozy bookstore come spring.
So this is the block between Kellogg and Douglas on Main Street on the correct. North side of the street. So this is where the Iowa State Design Center used to be, correct?
Yes.
And when will you be opening up?
Our goal is to open in February. We have some changes we'd like to make to the building. One of the things that really draws people to independent bookstores is the experience of being in the store. We really want to create a cozy, attractive, special place where people will enjoy spending time in addition to shopping for books.
What is it about an independent bookstore other than a cozy atmosphere? Why do that right now? Why take that step?
Someone told me once that to be a small business owner, you had to feel the fear and do it anyways. So
I know that feeling. Same goes for a radio station, actually.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have a good answer for why now. It's more a good point in my life to do it and the courage to do it despite a pandemic.
So tell us about your aha moment. Tell us about the moment when you decided to do this. Whatever got into you?
I was a journalist myself way back when. I was in print media. I was a newspaper reporter. But when I decided to have children, I was a stay-at-home mom. And I've been a stay-at-home mom for almost 13 years now. My youngest of four daughters is going to school half days up in Gilbert. And next year will be in full day kindergarten. And I got to this point where I could either kind of like retire, I guess you'd say, at the young age of 40, or I could imagine a second career. And for me, opening a bookstore was something I always used to talk about. I compare it to little girls when you ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say, oh, I want to be a princess. Opening a bookstore was kind of like that for me. Like, I'd like to be an astronaut or president of the United States. It didn't seem like a reality. So I kind of would fantasize about it. But I got to this point in my life and decided to spend some time investigating what it took to be successful as an independent bookstore owner, as well as just a small business owner on a main street. And I realized, you know, if anyone can do it, I can do it. I got a lot of learning to do, but I just decided it was within reality. Once I did enough research, it became something that I could envision I was capable of doing. So that was about 2 years ago when I started really digging into the logistics of how do you run an independent bookstore?
You mentioned at the beginning the issue of fear. When you started to research this, did you feel fearful that this wasn't possible?
The question is whether individuals' buying habits will support independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. There's been quite a lot of change in the industry over the years. Everybody remembers the movie You Got Mail, where the little shop around the corner is killed by Fox Books. So that really captured the moment in which box stores killed independent bookstores, their capacity, their glamour. Fox was a discounter, but also kind of like a Barnes and Noble. Over the decades, Amazon killed box stores. The ability for Amazon to make little to no profit on their books made it impossible for box stores to support themselves. But the demand to walk into a store and find curated selections, you know, to walk the shelves, to pull books off the shelves, to discover something new is still there. And so in the last, since 2016, bookstores, independent bookstores had increased across the country by almost 50%. So once I started to see that demand was still there, I was encouraged and willing to give it a go.
Now, but there's another person involved. So there must have been some moment when the two of you had a meeting of minds and said, this is happening.
Right. So way back in 2013, I had a daughter at, and for people who know Ames, in preschool, Pats, Bethesda preschool class. Pick up, drop off, you run into the other moms. And I discovered that a former high school classmate of mine, she was Ellen Moore, now Ellen Grimm, had a daughter in the same class as mine. And we would commiserate over our very strong-willed daughters. The daughters themselves would butt heads sometimes. They were very strong personalities. And so we would talk in the pickup line. And we got involved in community activism together. We connected over volunteering with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. And we just kind of formed a bond of like-mindedness. We ended up being in book club together. And so when I would talk about my little dream of opening a bookstore and how cute it would be, she would say, oh, yeah, you do it. I'll come. I'll be your YA expert. That's young adult books. She is a middle school English teacher. So we would joke. And then it got to this point, like I said, where my youngest was about ready to go off to full day school. And I said, if I don't do this, I'll regret it the rest of my life. And if somebody else does it, I'll just be pissed. I won't even be able to enjoy going into the bookstore because I had done it.
They'll be jealous.
So I came to her and I said, I'm ready to do this. How serious are you? She quit her job.
Wow.
This spring. She left teaching. She finished out the year. She helped her kids get through the pandemic. And we were ready to go.
Wow. A lot of risk taking going on here.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the vision for the bookstore now that it's happening? You have signed a lease, right?
Yes, we have our lease signed. 203 Main will be our home for the next 5 years. We love it. Beautiful exposed brick walls, a lovely loft in the back where we'd like to host book clubs, a lot of potential to make it a special place. But our vision for the bookstore is a store that primarily offers new books, board books through adult fiction and nonfiction, and very thoughtfully selected, curated books. These will be books that are being ordered by people who read books. This isn't like a merchandising strategy, what books can we push on such and such table to get the highest return. This is about finding books that are going to make people into readers or give people the escape or the education that they're searching for. Just really great books.
So you're going for quality.
Quality. And I mean, those books are out there, but if you walk into a big box store, sometimes, they don't have the most recent Man Booker, or if they do, the Man Booker is not highlighted on their feature store table. Mm-hmm. It's buried somewhere in there that you can't find. You can't even find someone to help you locate the book. Quality and curation and the assistance to find that next great read.
Mm-hmm. And this is radio, so the listener is listening to you, not seeing you, but I'm actually speaking to you with a visual component, and you do have books behind you. You are surrounded by a lot of books. I can see that.
Yeah. I have, I always say, they'll say, women might have shoe problems. I buy so many shoes, right? Well, my problem is picture books. I can rotate here for you and show you this giant stack in the corner of
picture books. A lot of picture books.
Yeah. I have about a 4.5-foot stack that my daughter's been reading, and she, instead of putting them back on the shelf, she wanted to stack them so she could see how tall a stack she's read in September and October. But now it's getting so tall that someone might get hurt. So she's going to have to learn how to alphabetically reshelve books, which would be very valuable for her role in the bookstore in the future.
I see. Yeah. Family business. So you're selling books already online, right? You already have an online business.
Right.
Where is that?
Yeah. If you go to our website, dogeardbooksames.com, it will offer a link to our online bookshop. One of the really cool things happening in the independent bookselling world is some really cool companies have come around to support independent booksellers. One of them is called Bookshop, Bookshop created online storefronts for independent booksellers that took a lot of the hard work of placing the order, having it shipped to your store, and then reshipped out to customers. They took that extra step out of the way to cut down on costs and also to cut down on time. So when we launched our website, we wanted to have an online bookshop site so that people could start ordering books right away that would support our storefront and help us get, you know, a great start on Main Street, but also have books to their house in under a week. You know, sometimes it's just 2 to 4 days. So that's one of the formats we're selling books already. We're also selling books through Libro FM. Libro FM is the counter product for Audible. It's the exact same subscription of audiobooks, flat fee per month, discounts on additional books that you order. But instead of the profits going to Amazon and Bezos, they support our bookstore. So if you're one of those people who primarily listens to books on your headphones, you can still support your local bookstore this way.
And that's also can be found through dogeareedbooks.aims.com.
Yes, dogeareedbooksaims.com.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm speaking with Amanda Lepper. She has a new bookstore, new independent bookstore coming to Ames. That always bodes well, adds to the enjoyment of life for sure. Amanda, we're heading into the holiday season. What is a book you would recommend as a gift?
Okay, so I have gone back over my favorite 2020 reads, and I have some of my favorites for you. If you like suspense, there's some people who really like a good thriller. I know so many people who are really into thrillers. I just finished this new book called Leave the World Behind by Rumman Alam. But let me tell you, it's disturbing because it's so based in our own reality that you can feel it being something that could actually happen tomorrow. It's a really outstanding book on observations about parenting, children, our relationships to strangers. So that's an excellent thriller. I also just finished a literary fiction for those who like to, you know, do something more on the literary fiction side. It's called What Are You Going Through by Sigrid Nunez. She got recognition for the book The Friend. And this is her next book that's come out. And it's an amazing contemplation on the experience of living in the world and understanding each other's suffering. It is fiction. A really great family drama that I think any reader would enjoy was All Adults Here by Emma Straub. Multi-generational family drama. Has some really great contemporary topics mixed in, just lovely family relationships. The Knockout Queen was a really great one early this year. It's been compared to The Goldfinch and The Mars Room, two books that got a lot of talk in recent years. Very much about how a parent's selfishness can fail a child and what becomes of their life thereafter. My personal favorite escape for anyone who hasn't discovered this author is Louise Penny in the Inspector Gamache detective series. She's created this little world across the Vermont border in Quebec, Canada, and it is both your detective mystery fix, but she's created this world of characters in this cozy little village that you just want to escape to. I read one of her books a month over the last year, and I had to wait for the last one that came out last month, and it was a really hard wait.
Amanda, I'm going to stop you there because we're running out of time. One last question. This is Native American Heritage Month. Any book you recommend on Native American history?
Yeah, I have two really great ones for you. A new one that just released is called Black Sun. It's written by Rebecca Roanhorse. She's the author of the Star Wars Resistance Reborn book. So she's got some heavy writing quality behind her, but she's being compared to George R.R. Martin. And this is a fantasy world that she's built, and it's pre-Columbian Americas. And so it's getting a ton of talk and is really exciting for people who enjoy world building and fantasy. And the other is They're There by Tommy Orange. And it's contemporary fiction, really beautiful book about contemporary Native American life.
Yeah, I've heard of that book myself, actually. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. It was great hearing about the great things coming in our future. Yeah. And continuing to make our town great and come alive with an independent bookstore, Dog-Eared Books, which is coming to Main Street in February, right?
Correct.
And the current website is dogearedbooksames.com and is already selling books online. So best of luck to you, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ursula.
Thank you. And Anna Magnuson, Anna Banana, you are with us. You're patiently waiting, and I'm kind of cutting you short, but give us a heart-to-heart message before we end the hour.
Well, thank you, Ursula and Amanda, because now I have a whole reading list thanks to local this morning. And also I want to give a thank you to Lisa Downs, Graham Watkins, who's the owner of the Cornucopia, located at 6008 Lincoln Way, who hosted a book signing with Jackie Haley this weekend, and that's how I met Amanda as well. So in the spirit of Jackie Haley's new book and a new bookstore opening in February, I just found a poem called I Opened a Book by Julia Donaldson. I opened a book and in I strode. Now nobody can find me. I left my chair, my house, my road, my town and my world behind me. I'm wearing the cloak. I've slipped on the ring. I've swallowed the magic potion. I fought with a dragon, dined with a king, and dived in a bottomless ocean. I opened a book and made some friends. I shared their tears and laughter and followed their road with its bumps and bends to the happily ever after. I finished my book and out I came. The cloak can no longer hide me. My chair and my house are just the same, but I have a book inside me. So congratulations to Amanda and her partner for opening up Dog-Eared Books and Ames. And so back to you, Ursula.
And thank you for that poem. It really expressed the power of a book to enrich one's life.
Yes, I'm so excited about the bookstore opening. I think that community radio, just like KHOI, I think they're building a place of community just around the corner from the station.
That's right, just around the corner. Well, you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. on Mondays. And remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org, and we'll put some links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, so you can tell your friends and family outside of the Ames, Central Iowa area that they can also listen to KHOI. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Anna Banana Magnuson. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard music by Benoit Jutras, who is one of my favorite composers. He does a lot of music for Cirque du Soleil. So the music is grandiose at 9 a.m. And remember that if you need information about voting, two good websites are vote.org or iwillvote.com. Those are two good resources to find voting. Although if you go to the website of your respective party, Democrat or Republican Party, I'm sure they are also giving you all the information you need at this point to find a place to vote. And if you are going to vote on Election Day, remember, you need your ID as well as any other time to vote. So be sure you bring the proper ID with you. And you can still register to vote at the voting booth. But plan to spend the whole day then, because it's going to take a little bit of time to do all that. No matter what happens tomorrow, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. And Anna?
We'll see you again on the radio.
Thank you. We'll see you again on the radio, Anna.
Were you convicted of a felony? Would you like to vote in Iowa? Now you probably can. On August 5th, the law in Iowa changed. That means most Iowans convicted of a felony can now vote. As long as you've discharged your sentence, including probation, parole, supervised release, and special sentence. Find out more at youcanvoteiowa.org. That's youcanvoteiowa.org.